Escape the Underworld. My name's Chase.
I have nothing witty to say, but I'm David.
And welcome to the RTR Forward podcast, where we talk about everything and anything RTR Forward. That's Pioneer, Standard, Historic, Brawl, and all those things. Today we've got a pretty loaded topic, I guess, and that's the rest of Theros Reveals.
So, yeah, and we're going to go fast.
And we are going to go fast because
there's a couple things at play. David doesn't feel good, and two, there's a lot of spoilers, so we gotta go fast.
Yes, there are, and I just want to say, you know, gotta look out for our editor here, you know, save him some time. He's gonna hate us if this goes over an hour.
I mean, I know you don't like our editor, but I try to help him as much as I can.
Yeah, our editor's a jerk, and if you've never listened before, I am the editor. Okay, anyways. That'd be awkward. They just think we're dogging on somebody that they don't know. It's really me, guys. I'm the one that edits. I'm the one that slaves behind the keyboard. But let's get right into it. We don't really have anything else to talk about. It hasn't been a lot of news and magic right now other than all these reveals. And reveal season is almost over. So I think tomorrow, which is Friday, January 10th. I had to think about that for a second. This month has gone by really quickly so far. But yes, that is when the reveals, the full reveal appears on Magic's website, where you can see all the cards, even the commons and uncommons that weren't revealed, so you can get a full look at what's coming out in the next 2 weeks. But let's go ahead and dig our way into it. I'm going to let David start us off.
Yeah, we're going to start out with mythics. The first mythic that we're going to talk about is Pelucranos, Unchained. There's a comma in there, that's why I waited so long. It's very important. He is two generic, a black and a green, for legendary creature, Zombie Hydra. It enters the battlefield with 6+1+1 counters on it, and if it escapes, then it enters with 12+1+1 counters on it. Then if damage would be dealt to it while it has +1/+1 counters on it, prevent that damage and remove that many +1/+1 counters from it. You may also pay 3, and it fights another creature, that 3 being one generic, a black and a green. And then its escape cost is 4, a black and a green, exiling 6 other cards from your graveyard. Jesus, that was a lot of text.
It was almost like Questing Beast levels of text. That was a lot of text.
But yeah, I mean, at worst, a 6/6 for 4?
Yeah, so it is a bonus up from the original Pelucranos, which was a 5/5 for 4, but maybe a little harder to cast because it was double green. Whereas this one is Golgari green black for a 6/6. This one, I don't think original Pelucranos had trample either. This one, yeah, so I guess that makes sense. But this one does have that damage clause to where if you deal damage to it, you just remove counters from it instead of killing it. Obviously, when you remove all 6 counters from it, he'll have 0 toughness and will die anyways. But it's a pretty neat little thing.
Unless you do something that gives it something.
Like more counters?
Yeah. Just a generic effect that gives it +1/+1.
Like Proliferate, which came out in War of the Spark, allows you to add counters to things.
Yeah.
So that.
And then you just play Jund and fling it at people.
Yeah, exactly. And if you notice, you just eat if it dies, so you can use it to. It's kind of just like a removal spell. So you play a big 6/6, you can smack in. They're probably going to trade creatures into it, so it's a removal spell in that way. But also the fact that you can pay 3 mana and have it fight another creature, which is another way of removing creatures. And then you kind of want this guy to die, because if he dies, he goes to your graveyard, and then you can use his escape ability by paying 6 mana and then exiling 6 other cards from your graveyard to return him to the battlefield. And he has that extra little condition that makes him re-enter the battlefield if escape is paid with 12 counters. So he becomes a big 12/12 for 6 mana, which is just a big boy.
Yep.
A real big boy. And if you...
Seems decent.
Yeah, if you untap them on the next turn, you could fight, you know, two creatures with 6 mana, which is really good, especially with the, you know, a 12/12. You can basically kill anything that's not indestructible. And one fun little note, so Pelucranos in his original iteration had 5 heads, thus he was a 5/5. Well, now if you look at his art now, he has 6 heads, thus he's a 6/6. And you might be asking, why does he have 6 heads? Well, that's because Elspeth cut off one of his heads in original Theros, Thus he died. Thus he went to Underworld. But since he's a Hydra, he grew back 2 in its place. So yeah. Then if you kill it again, he comes back with 12 heads. And he's a 12-12. Because he grows 2 heads for every head that's destroyed. And it's kind of neat. It's a little flavorful. Huh.
That is some flavor right there.
Yeah, some real flavor.
I also know that when you cut off a head of a Hydra, 2 grow back because I watch Marvel movies.
Okay. Anyways, next we've got Thassa, Deep Dwelling. This is the last god of all the ones that have been revealed so far. So this is the blue god. This is Thassa. She's 4 mana, 3 and a blue for a legendary enchantment creature god. She's indestructible. And she has the devotion clause, so devotion to blue is less than 5. She isn't a creature, so she's just a legendary enchantment that's indestructible. She's a 6-5, and she has a few abilities. So at the beginning of your end step, exile up to one other target creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control. And then she has an activated ability for 4 mana, 3 and a blue, and you can tap another target creature. Now her first ability is really interesting because of how it reads, where it exiles a creature you control and then returns it to the battlefield under your control. Usually with effects like this, it usually says its owner's control. So, because of this, with Thassa, you can use a few cards like Act of Treason for 3, I think it's 3 mana, 2 and a red. You can take control of target creature until end of turn. It gains haste. You know, you stack Thassa's trigger to exile that creature first. Then it'll come back to the battlefield under your control. You will now own that creature. Its Act of Treason effect will no longer matter, and it's your creature. You don't technically own it, but right. It's now no longer under effect from that effect of Act of Treason. So it's not going to return back to your opponent when your turn ends.
Yep.
What's really neat is we currently in Standard have a 1 mana card, 1 red for a steal effect, and I think it's Claim the Firstborn.
Yep.
Which is a 1 mana red sorcery where you can gain control of, I think it's target creature that's CMC 3 or less.
Sounds about right.
Something like that. So you can play Thassa on turn 5, then use that card to steal maybe your opponent's Bone Crusher Giant, and then it's now your 4-3.
Ha.
Not theirs. So that's pretty cool. I really like this card. I think this card's going to kind of slot its way into Commander for sure. I don't know what kind of splash this will have in current Standard. I've heard some talks about this going into some kind of like a Yaruk shell with some other ETBs. So this one just gives you additional ETBs. So that'd be really nice. But if anything, this card will fit into some kind of home like that. Probably won't be like, you know, very high tier deck, but it'll be a fun deck nonetheless.
So, continuing from our blue theme, we'll go with the Simic theme. Next, we got Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, which costs 1, a green, and a blue. For a legendary creature, Elder Giant. And when it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it, unless it escaped. And whenever Uro enters the battlefield or attacks, you gain 3 life and draw a card. Then you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. And its escape cost is 2 green and 2 blue. And you exile 5 other cards from your graveyard. So, and it's a 6-6. That's probably the most important part of that. So, yeah. Seems good. You just play it on turn 3. Ramp a little bit. Gain some life. Draw a card. Wait. Yeah. Yeah, that none of that was wrong. Jesus.
None of that was wrong. No, it's a 3 mana growth spiral that also nets you 3 life. And in the, you know, later in game, it gives you a creature out of the yard that ETBs again, and it's also an attack trigger. So every time he smacks in for 6 damage, you're also drawing a card, putting a land on the battlefield, and gaining 3 life all around. This card's going to see a lot of play.
Yeah. Seems dumb.
It's interesting, though, because if you think about it, this is also 3 mana. Remember, there was another 3 mana Simic card that was really good, and it just got banned. So I feel like this 3 mana card could kind of just slot right in that deck.
I totally thought you were talking about little Elemental Boy Risen Reef.
No.
I was like, that's a little better than Risen Reef.
No, I'm talking about Oko. See, what I want to say, so as we're going through these cards, I want you to just, everybody to just ponder and just think about that these cards were released with Wizards knowing that once upon a time, Veil of Summer and Oko would all be legal in Standard. So just think about that when you look at some of these green and blue cards.
I mean, different people work on different sets.
Still, they're pretty cognizant of what's already in the meta. That's kind of what play design is for. So it's super interesting that we keep getting really good Simic cards, even knowing that the playtest team and or play design team and the design teams were all aware of the previous set.
I don't know. I'm prepared to accept our Simic overlords.
Yeah, so. At this point.
On to the next card. It's good. We know it.
It's okay. It's Kiora Best.
Oh, no, I was talking about Uro.
Oh, okay. So you're not talking about this card?
I mean,
it's okay.
Yeah.
It's Kiora Best the Sea God. It's 7 mana for 5/2 blue for a saga. So if you don't remember what a saga is, it's an enchantment that sits on the battlefield for X amount of turns, and that's equal to the amount of, I guess, chapters in the saga. And so when it enters the battlefield, you put a lore counter on it, and the first chapter, which is clearly displayed there, will trigger, and you'll get that effect. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, it'll trigger again. And then once the final chapter is complete, it'll sacrifice itself and go to your graveyard. So the first chapter is create an 8/8 blue Kraken creature token with hexproof. So then the second chapter is tap all non-land permanents target opponent controls. They don't untap during their controller's next untap step. And then the third chapter is gain control of target permanent and opponent controls and untap it. A lot of spice for 7 mana. So if you drop this in limited, you pretty much are in a pretty steady position to win the game. I think this is too high of cost to see play in Standard or any other formats. Might see play in Commander. You never really know with some of these cards. They're all wild. Commander's a wild card.
I just assume that every card's playable in Commander.
Yeah, so. I mean, the one thing that kind of makes this not as good in Commander is the fact that its second chapter just taps all non-land permanents target opponent controls. If it was each opponent, this card would be really good in Commander. Mm-hmm. More bonkers than that. But this could, I don't know, slide itself into maybe a control shell in Standard. I don't know. I don't know what a control shell is going to look like. I think this is too high of cost for sure from what they're kind of looking for in a win condition. But I mean, an 8/8 with hexproof is
still pretty good.
So, yeah, that's Kiora Best the Sea God, which is a tale of Kiora the Planeswalkers, who, I guess, fights Thassa and then steals her bident, and then Thassa gets really upset. So they did a little tale about that.
Thassa angry.
She still doesn't have her bident. If you saw in her art for her new card, she has, like, some kind of spear.
Yeah. It's a singlet or something.
Moving on.
Next we got Kroxa, Titan of Death's Hunger. Legendary creature, Elder Giant. Costa. Black and a red. For another 6/6. Once again, when it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escaped. Its escape cost is 2 black and 2 red, and exiling 5 other cards. And then whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, each opponent discards a card. Then each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card this way loses 3 life. Jesus, that is worded poorly. I remember reading this earlier and going, oh my god, it hurts my brain thinking about what I'm doing.
It was until today that I realized that it still deals 3 damage to you if you discard a non-land card. I thought it just made them discard a card, and if they couldn't, just dealt 3 damage to them. So this card's a lot better than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Based on that. But I mean, 2 mana for that effect is pretty interesting. It being red and black can maybe slot into like a sacrifice deck. I don't know if that's kind of what they want, but you're gonna be filling your graveyard pretty quickly in general, so you could go ahead and throw this back out on turn 4. I think though, this combos pretty well with Lazav, the Multifarious from Guilds of Ravnica. He's 2 mana, a blue and a black. He is a 1/3 creature, legendary creature. When he enters the battlefield, you surveil 1, which is look at the top card of your library, decide if you want to keep it on top or put it in your graveyard. And then he has an X ability, which allows him to become a copy of any creature card in, believe it's any graveyard, or it's your graveyard, I can't remember. But and he can become a copy of it. So Let's say you play Kroxa on turn two, or you're playing Uro, the other Elder Giant. You could either play like a Sultai build or a Grixis build, and have, so when you play those Elder Giants, they're obviously, you're playing them from your hand, so they will sack immediately, so they'll go straight to the graveyard. If you have Lazav on the field, then you can just pay two mana or three mana to copy one of the two giants, and now you have a 6/6 with an attack trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And since Lazav's already on the battlefield, you don't have the battlefield triggered effects from the Elder Giants, so Lazav will not sack himself because he's not entering the battlefield. So that also means you won't get the injured battlefield effect. But since the Titans also have a attack effect, you'll still get that. So you're basically paying 2 to 3 mana for a 6/6 with an attack ability. So that's, yeah. I think that's pretty neat.
It is pretty neat. And it just so happens that, well, yeah, all those share color with them.
Yeah.
All three of those escapey boys. Yeah, there's only three of them.
Oh, you mean Pelucranos?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like Titans. Yeah. I was like, there's only two Titans.
Yeah,
what are you,
yeah,
about?
You can throw Pelucranos in there. I mean, wait, can you?
Oh, no.
No, you can't. Never mind. Yeah, don't do Pelucranos.
Your Lazav will die immediately because there's no enter the battlefield effect, so he won't get 6+1/+1 counters, and it'll be a 0/0.
I lied.
So don't listen to David. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
That's right.
But yeah, I think the Elder Giants are going to see play in some way. Definitely the Simic one is probably going to see more play than the Rakdos one, but I think the Rakdos one is still really good. It gives hand disruption in Rakdos or even Jund, and it'd probably be good in a little sacrifice deck because it's going to trigger any sacrifice effects that you have since you are sacrificing it when it initially enters the battlefield. So I think it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, both seem decent.
Yeah. Next off, we've got a new Planeswalker. This is Kallax, Destiny's Hand. He is 4 mana for 2 and a green and a white. He has 3 abilities. His first ability is a +1. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal an enchantment card from among them and put that card into your hand. Then you can put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. His second ability is a -3, where you can exile target creature or enchantment you don't control until target creature you control leaves the battlefield. So obviously we're starting to see an enchantment theme with this guy. And then his third ability is a -7. Return all enchantment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. So he has a little bit of an ultimate of a resurrection for all your enchantments. And so since Theros has enchantment creatures, so this can also return creatures to the battlefield alongside your normal enchantments. So I think this card is definitely focused towards an enchantment deck. I could see some kind of maybe green-white enchantments list float around. I've already seen a few lists, and honestly, they're looking pretty good. I think it's going to be a fun archetype.
Hashtag not Oko.
He is not Oko. You're right. You're 100% correct.
For better or for worse.
I think he'll be nice in an enchantment list. I don't really think he'll see play anywhere else because he really relies on enchantments. But I think he'll be fun. I think he'll slide his way into any Enchantress decks and Commander and maybe even Pioneer. I know we have a lot more enchantments to work with in Pioneer. So potentially he could even be a top end in a Boggles list since it's typically green white already. Because typically those lists run a ton of enchantments, so having a card that can just, get you an enchantment every turn is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you can use those enchantments. You can turn some enchantments that are already, affecting your Boggle into extra removal spells, too. So, I think he's going to be pretty decent. He'll definitely find a home somewhere. I'm excited to play with him, because I really want to build some kind of enchantments deck, because I think some of the constellation effects are bonkers. So, yeah.
He's just not Broko.
You're right.
And that's a good thing.
You know why? It's because he has 2 negative abilities.
Oh, is that why? I thought it was because he was 4 mana.
Oh, okay.
And he only has 4 loyalty entering the battlefield.
So did Oko. Oko came in with 4 loyalty. He had a +1 and a +2.
That's right. It was a 4, then a +2.
Yeah.
So he can't be at 6. That's what I'm meaning to say here.
You're right.
Okay. Last mythic. Nyxbloom Ancient. Big old 7 mana, 4 generic, 3 green for a 5/5 trampler, which seems really bad until you read the rest of the card. If you tap a permanent for mana, it produces three times as much of that mana instead. So, yeah.
I mean,
a lot of mana.
We've seen effects like this before, notably some cards in Commander that usually double the amount of mana you might create. We've never seen, and it's usually based on lands that you tap, whereas this one, it's any permanent that produces mana, so it can be an artifact.
It could be a land or elf.
It could be, you know, one of your elves, so it produces three times that. So let's say, I mean, Nyx Lotus, which taps for your devotion. So let's say you have, so this guy already offers you three devotion. Let's say he's the only guy on the field. You are getting three mana from the Nyx Lotus, and then your time's going by three. So you're getting nine mana just by having this guy on the field with a producer like that. Obviously, it's gonna combo a lot with more mana producing cards. I know Sol Ring can produce six mana.
Six colorless, though.
Six colorless mana. Your Llanowar Elves can make three mana. So I don't think this is going to see a lot of play in Standard. There was the one thought of maybe you could slide this into like a Wilderness Reclamation deck for the memes.
Oh, dear God.
And then play like, I don't know.
Expansion Explosion.
Exactly. And then do that to your opponent for like 90 damage.
Or just make them draw 90 cards.
Yeah, just kill their creature for 90 damage and then make them draw 90 cards. So I think this card's very fun. It's definitely going to be a staple in some more casual formats for a long time. I don't know what kind of impact this is going to have on Pioneer. I don't think this is going to have an impact on Pioneer at all. I think it's just too slow for how fast the format still is. But yeah, I think it's a really good card. I think it's going to be a green staple for a lot of more casual formats.
I agree.
He's also an enchantment creature. He didn't mention that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So he can be tutored by enchantment effects.
You're right.
Pretty neat.
Pretty neat. On to rares. What's our first rare?
Our first rare is, so making sure we don't do any duplicates, we've got Arasta, the pasta of the Endless Web. And it's 4 mana for 2 and 2 green for legendary enchantment creature spider. She has reach. Whenever an opponent casts an instant or sorcery spell, create a 1/2 green spider creature token with reach, and she's a 3/5.
Dude, it's Ishkana!
Yeah, basically, your opponent just has to, you know, cast instants and sorceries. And you can have as many little spiders as they cast spells for.
Yeah, not quite as good as Ishkana.
No, but I mean, it's a 3/5, which is not bad for 4 mana. I mean, it's not like, you know, Questing Beast level, but
yeah.
Let's say, you know, we have a lot of, like, spells decks. Like, let's say that we move into new Standard, and Simic Flash is still really good, and Izzyflash may still be pretty decent. Maybe even like some kind of, I don't know, spell slinger deck appears. Maybe this card might be pretty good. As long as it doesn't get countered, it'll produce you a little army of 1/2s, which pretty good against flyers since they have reach, and she's good against flyers because she has reach.
Yeah.
So
seems like a decent card.
Seems like a decent card. I don't know where it'll slot in. It's definitely not what I would consider an auto include. I think it would really depend on the meta for sure.
Yeah. Next up, we got that Nessian Boar. It was a boar. 5 mana, 3/2 green. For a 10/6, all creatures able to block Nessian Boar do so. Whenever Nessian Boar becomes blocked by a creature, that creature's controller draws a card.
Sounds like a boar to me.
Yeah. That needs trample or something to be good.
Something like that. I think this is just like a creature removal spell, so This is my card, kind of green card, you know, not overpowered, kind of
no,
bad.
This is awful.
this is my kind of green card right here. This is the kind of green cards we got a few years ago.
The person that doesn't like green. This looks garbage.
This card is not good. Maybe if it was like you gain draw a card for each creature that
blocked. Then it would be possibly playable, but then I still don't think it would be great.
I don't think it would be great, but I think it would definitely swing it slower in the right direction. But no, I don't think it's a good card. Let's move on. We've got Tectonic Giant. He's also 4 mana. 2/2 red for a creature elemental giant. And whenever Tectonic Giant attacks or becomes the target of a spell an opponent controls, choose one, and that's Tectonic Giant deals 3 damage to each opponent, or Exile the top two cards of your library. Choose one of them. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. And he's a 3/4. So if you're slinging him in some kind of, you know, aggressive deck, he's 4 mana. Next turn, you can either attack for a theoretical 6, since his attack trigger can deal 3 damage to each opponent. Or you can gain some card advantage. So I think he's a sweet little payoff in like a red-green monsters-style deck, possibly.
Yeah. Great, and some two-headed giant, if you're into that.
Yeah, so if you're seeing this card while you're playing the limited events at your pre-release, and you or your teammate opens this card, slam it in your deck right now, because it's going to deal 6 damage to your opponent every time it attacks or becomes the target of a spell. You attack 3 times, and your opponent's probably already dead.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So that's another way to think about that card. So I think it's going to be a good card.
Next up, we got the Wave Break Hippocamp, which is a 3 mana, 2 and a blue, for an enchantment creature, Horsefish. Whenever you cast your first spell during each opponent's turn, draw a card. And it's a 2/2. So, seems okay-ish.
Seems Simic Flash / is it Flash?
Yeah, but it doesn't have Flash.
Yeah, but the fact that you can cantrip or basically draw a card every time you play something on your opponent's turn is just, that's really good. That's some card advantage right there.
That is good, but I just, a 2/2, I don't know.
We'll have to see where, yeah, like, some of the decks sit. If we've got, like, a mono-red deck running around with shocks and, like, there's a lot of cheap removal, then maybe this card's not going to be good enough. But it is interesting.
It's interesting, yeah.
Definitely draws the eye, being able to draw a card every time you cast a spell on your opponent's turn, or the first spell on your opponent's turn.
Yeah, first spell.
Not that bonkers.
It would be very good if it was every spell.
But, I mean, if you're on average casting one spell on each of your opponent's turns, then you're basically replacing that spell.
Yeah.
So, next off, we've got, there's a cycle of these. These are, this one is Nylea's Intervention. It's X and 2 green for a sorcery with a choose one effect. So it has 2 different effects. You can search your library for up to X land cards, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. Or Nylea's Intervention deals twice X damage to each creature with flying. Now, if you think about the first effect for a second, that's X land cards, so that's not basic land cards. That is any land you want from your library. So this card is going to smack right into casual format, so Commander's going to love this card. What you got to think about for a second, though, is this card was being released in the same standard that Field of the Dead was in. So you could just 6 mana, which at that, you know, with, you know, that Field of the Dead deck, you are just ramping so hard, so 6 mana really isn't that hard. Grab all 4 of your Field of the Deads and then just play one every turn.
In Wizards' defense, they didn't think Field of the Dead was going to be as ridiculous as it was.
Yeah, but now they've given us a tutor for the card.
Right. But
Golos was a good tutor, but this card is a better tutor.
They didn't think people would go, oh. Well, they just didn't think it'd be as dumb as it was.
They really missed
that,
the mark.
That card needed to be legendary. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it should have been. They definitely missed the mark on a few cards in the last few sets. I wonder what the Darrow's card is going to be that they missed the mark on. I don't know. With this increase in power level, we don't really know what could happen. But I think this card's pretty good. I don't know. I don't think there's really going to be like a lands deck in Standard, since there aren't really, you know, any goals to having a lands deck other than just having more mana. Mm-hmm. I don't think the dealing twice X damage to each creature with flying is really that big of a deal. There's not any really flyers decks rolling around.
Yeah.
There aren't any like big flyers that you really have to deal with currently. And there weren't really any dragons in this set from my knowledge. So there's not going to be a lot of problems with things in the air. So I don't think that's going to be as relevant, but,
except for our next creature. Sorry, that was way too much hype.
What's our next creature?
Phoenix of Ash. It's a 3 mana, 1, a red, and a red for a phoenix that has flying and haste. You can pay 2 and a red, and Phoenix of the Ash gets +2/+0 until end of turn. And it's got escape for 2 and 2 red. Exile 3 other cards. And if it escapes, it gets +1/+1 counter on it. So, I mean, it's decent.
I mean, it's recursive, and exiling three other cards is not that hard to do.
Yeah.
So, and then it comes back as a 3/3 with haste and flying. So
this is definitely a mono red aggro.
It could see play. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's like just above. I think escape gives it that just above the, you know, the threshold for what a good Phoenix is.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's say you're flooding out. Let's say you're flooding out mono red happens.
Yeah.
And you have this guy in your graveyard. You can just cast him. And then if you've got some extra mana to pump into him, you could, you know, have like a 5-point, you know, to 7-point attack.
Yeah.
And then on the following turn, swing for even more. So this definitely is something. Something scary to deal with, and if we see like some kind of mono red deck running around, this could slot into it. Who knows?
Possible.
Don't think it's going to see play in Pioneer though. We've already got better Phoenixes in Pioneer. This one is not of the par of Rekindling Phoenix. So,
I think you meant Arc Light Phoenix, but Rekindling Phoenix is good too.
Rekindling Phoenix is really good too. They're both good, but I think right now, well, yeah, I guess Arclight sees the most play right now, but I know there's a Is It Emerge deck.
Oh, yeah.
Next off, we've got Haktos the Unscarred. He is 4 mana for 2 red and 2 white for legendary creature Human Warrior. Haktos the Unscarred attacks each combat if able. As Haktos enters the battlefield, choose 2, 3, or 4 at random, and Haktos has protection from each converted mana cost other than the chosen number. And he is a 6/1. So, play this boy for 4 mana. You got to make sure you have double red, double white for a 6/1 that's going to attack each combat. But, let's say he enters the battlefield and you roll, I don't know, a 2 or a 3 or a 4. He's going to gain protection from every other converted mana cost other than that cost. So, protection means basically can't be targeted, can't be blocked. Can't be dealt damage by. You could play this.
So you could block 2 or 3 drops or 4 drops.
If you roll like a 2, he's got a protection from 2 and 3 and 4 drops. So if your opponent's just running, you know, a few 3 drops, you're just going to be attacking past them. And they're not going to be able to do anything about it unless they have some kind of 2 mana spell that's going to hurt him. He's definitely, we have a key, you know, randomness. Randomness is not always secure in
how you play this. I'm just saying, you throw this in Panharmonicon. Let's do it.
But then it'll just reset.
Does it reset?
Yes.
Do you know for sure if that's the case?
What I do know is that it does not work with Zav, because his effect is enters the battlefield, and Wizards made a ruling to where if his first trigger doesn't enable, then his second one doesn't matter. So if you copy him with Zav, Zav will be a 6/1 that attacks each combat that has no other abilities.
Okay.
So... I'm saying for that.
If he enters with Panharmonicon, you trigger his ETB twice.
But why would you want to trigger it twice?
Because then you have protection from all three. Assuming you hit a different number on the second random.
Each converted mana cost other than the chosen number.
Yeah.
So if you did him twice, the chosen number would have been 2 and 3.
You're right.
He would have had protection from everything but 2 and 3.
Or, I don't know, man.
So Panharmonicon actually makes him worse. Because then they have more CMCs that they can use to kill him.
Yeah, but does it also have protection from those? Because...
No. It just says the chosen number. Each converted mana costs other than the chosen number. Technically, you've chosen 2 numbers. I don't know. I'm not a rules lawyer, but that just doesn't seem right. But he's a neat card.
I want it to be right, though.
He's flavorful. I think he's based off of Achilles. Because he's indestructible from everything. He can't be touched by anything other than one little thing gets him right in the heel. So I think that's pretty neat. Little flavor for Greek mythology. But yeah.
All right. Next we got the first Irone? What are we going with here? Irone?
The first Irone
Games. Irone. Okay. First Irone Games, which costs 2 and a green. For an enchantment saga with 4 chapters, the first chapter is create a 1/1 white human soldier creature token. Second chapter is put 3+1/+1 counters on target creature you control. Third chapter, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, draw 2 cards. And then chapter 4, create a gold token. Question, what's a gold token?
A gold token is exactly what you think it is. It produces mana.
Okay.
One mana. It's basically like the treasure tokens.
Yeah. God forbid we call it treasure.
Oh, it's from Original Theros.
That makes more sense if it's from another Theros.
Original Theros, there was a card that turned things into gold and made gold tokens, which were sacrificed to this artifact, add one mana of any color. I think they're a little different from treasures, because you have to tap a treasure to get its... Whereas a gold,
you just sack it.
Yep, so it can be tapped.
So it's slightly different. Okay.
I think it mattered back in the Kaladesh / Ixalan standard, because Kaladesh had Improvise, which tapped untapped artifacts. So the fact that you could tap your treasures and then immediately sack them for mana netted you 2 mana from that. So there's, I think there was a reason you had to tap to use them. But anyways, that doesn't matter. But yes, it makes gold token. So this is our first 4-chapter saga. Yeah. There were no 4-chapter sagas in Dominaria. I think we're going to see two to three 4-chapter sagas. I think there's a few of them. Or this might be the only one. I don't actually know. But yes, this is the first time we've seen this. It's a progression of a story, which is pretty neat. You got a little weak dude, and then he gets strong, and then you draw cards because he, I don't know, wins things. And then he gets first place and gets the gold.
Yeah.
Pretty neat. I don't know where this card's going to slot in. I've seen some people play tests with this card. I mean, it's a 3 mana, makes a 1/1, but then if that 1/1, or if you have another creature, that creature gets huge, and then if it stays around, you draw 2 cards. So I think it might see some play somewhere.
Maybe get swole.
Some kind of aggressive monsters deck. Maybe this could be a nice little 3-drop.
Yeah.
Makes your boys bigger.
Because it makes your boys swole.
Makes them real swole. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good card. It might slot its way, like I said, into some kind of aggressive deck. Maybe even a white-green enchantments. Because you play it and it's going to come down and make you a blocker for Kallax. So who knows? Yep. Next off, you've got Erebos' intervention. So like I said, this is a cycle. Each god has its own intervention. They're all X spells. So this one's X and a black for an instant. Choose one. Target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn. You gain X life. Or exile up to twice X target cards from graveyards. So you can either use it as an instant speed kill spell where you're paying X for the amount of toughness that creature has. And then you gain X life. Or you can use this to maybe... Let's say your opponent's running that Elder Giant Lazav deck, and you're like, I don't want nothing in your graveyard, so I'm going to cast this at instant speed and exile a bunch of cards from your graveyard so you can't escape things. So it's a mode-all spell, so I think if there's some kind of like blue-black control deck with Ashiok or maybe an Esper control deck, this might see like a 1 or 2 of, because it's a removal spell or graveyard hate. So that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I think it's... a fine card.
For sure. I think it's going to see play in at least standard. Yeah. For sure. It's good against the gods too, because gods do have indestructible, but if they are a creature and you set their toughness to 0 or less, they die anyways. So indestructible does not stop that.
For sure. Next we got Purphoros' intervention, which is an X red. This one's a sorcery. Choose one, create an X1 red elemental creature token with trample and haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. And the second mode is Purphoros' intervention deals twice X damage to target creature or planeswalker. So, I mean, yeah, it's similar. I could see it seeing standard play just because cards that have flexibility see a decent amount of play.
For the most part, yeah. I think this one hurts a little bit because it is a sorcery.
Yes, but... I guess it could have been an instant, and then you could have done the elemental on your opponent's end step or something, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not going to be a great removal spell.
Yeah, at least not sorcery speed. But I definitely think Erebos' intervention will see more play than Purphoros's, but Purphoros's could see play if it's in some kind of red deck that doesn't have black. It's just another way to remove either target creature or planeswalker. It does say planeswalker, and red does have a problem removing planeswalkers, so... If you're running some kind of like Izzet or Jeskai deck, maybe this would be a 1 or 2 of, as maybe either a finisher or some removal.
Yep.
So next off, we've got Dryad of Elysian.
I think Elysian.
Elysian. Elysian, something like that. Dryad of Elysian Grove. He's 3 mana for 2 and a green for an enchantment creature, Nymph. You may play an additional land on each of your turns, and then lands you control are every basic land type in addition to their other types. And he's a 2/4.
Yeah.
So you can play this, and then your lands can tap for all the colors. Yeah. Yay.
This boy was like, hey, Wayward Swordtooth from Ixalan, I see you and I raise you. I'm better than you.
Yeah. So
not quite as aggressively power and toughness wise, but
no, but I definitely think this card's gonna see some amount of play in Standard for sure. This is gonna be an all-star in other formats like Commander. This could even see play maybe in Modern, because this does turn all of your lands into mountains. So if you wanted to run some kind of scapeshift deck with Valuket, the Molten Pinnacle, and just have a lot more mountains, turn some of your forests into mountains for extra damage, maybe kill somebody a little faster.
Yeah.
Could be pretty good. I don't know. Should be. I think it's going to be a good card. I think it'll definitely see slot its way. Definitely, I would play this card in some kind of like green, white enchantments, potentially.
Heck yeah.
Get some extra land drops, man. And hit the colors you need.
Let's say
if you're missing like double white or double green.
Yeah. Seems good.
For sure.
Next, we got that Gravebreaker Lamia, which is a 5-mana, 4 and a black for an enchantment creature, Snake Lamia. 4/4, lifelink. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for a card. Put it into your graveyard, and then shuffle your library. Spells you cast from your graveyard cost 1 less to cast. So, obviously, some escape.
For sure. Some definitely some help for escape. Stuff. I like this card, not for Standard, I like this card for my Commander deck. So I play Moldrotha. This card would slot so well into Moldrotha. Just making everything cost 1 less for my graveyard, because that's what he wants to do. And it tutors something to your graveyard. And it's a 4/4 with lifelink. So, like, all around, just, it's a fun card. Now, I'll definitely play it there. I think it is too expensive, though, to see play really anywhere else. I mean, yeah, it is cool. You can take, like, a Polukranos and throw it to your yard and then have, like, a 5-mana Polukranos that you can escape. Not bad, but I don't think for 5-mana that's going to be good enough. So, yeah. Next up, we've got Mantle of the Wolf. 4 mana, 3 and a green. Enchantment Aura. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +4/+4. And when Mantle of the Wolf is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, create 2/2 green wolf creature tokens. So it's a aura that snaps onto your creature, makes him really big, but then if either your creature dies or someone destroys the enchantment, then you get 2/2 green wolves.
2/2s.
So I think this card's a nice little card for Limited. I don't think it's good enough to see play in Standard. Typically, costly enchantment auras like these usually don't see a lot of play. But this one does kind of help you out if they, you know, you do commit a lot to making a big creature and then they just kill it. You at least get some 2/2 wolves out of it. But I think other than that, I don't think it's not a great card. It's okay.
I agree. Next, we got Archon of Sun's Grace, which is a 4-mana, 2 and 2 white, for a creature Archon. It's a 3/4 with flying and lifelink, and Pegasus creatures you control have lifelink. Then it has Constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, create a 2/2 white Pegasus creature token with flying. So, maybe see some play in a green-white Constellation deck.
I like this card. I like this card as like, this is definitely like the payoff that this and Setessan Champion are like the playoffs I need for like an enchantments based deck, like a green white enchantments based deck. It's cheap. Every time you play enchantments, it makes 2/2s with flying and lifelink.
Cheap.
Four mana is not that bad for me. 4 mana is not that bad if you can make a bunch of bodies with it. I think it's definitely going to be, this is definitely going to see play in at least my, you know, green white enchantments deck. I think it's definitely a good payoff for enchantment synergies, for sure. But other than that, I think it's a little too expensive for any other format, for sure. I don't think it's going to make any splash in Pioneer.
Nah.
But I think this could make some splash in Standard. I think in Limited, this card's going to be a house.
Oh, yeah. I mean, flyers in Standard typically alone are just pretty decent.
Yeah. So, anyways, I look forward to building around this card. And I'll we'll talk about it in the future as we kind of theorize deck techs and, you know, maybe the next podcast. But next, we've got Eat to Extinction. This is 4 mana, 3 and a black for an instant. Exile target creature or planeswalker. Look at the top card of your library. Then you may put that card into your graveyard. So it's basically a 4 mana It's Vraska's Contempt, but it's easier to cast since it's not double black. It exiles a creature, and then instead of gaining you 2 life, you get to, I guess, surveil 1, which is, you know, look at the top card and then decide if you want to put it in the graveyard or not. So I think,
why doesn't it just say surveil 1? I get that surveil's not in this set, but come on.
Yeah, well, surveil's not an evergreen mechanic like Scry.
I know.
But yeah, I think this card will see play. I think especially if some of the, like, the gods start to see play, like Clothis and Heliod and maybe a few of the other ones, you definitely want to have pack in some exile, because you're not going to be able to get rid of those gods any other way. For that, I think this will be a nice, you know, 2 to 3 of in some decks. The Murderous Rider is definitely better, but having the ability to exile is pretty strong, especially in like a graveyard based set or format.
Man, I look at that card and I go, Vraska's Contempt was like a $20 card at some time.
Well, Vraska's Contempt was also the only instant speed removal in the format for like a year and a half. So yes.
True. All right. Thrix, the Sudden Storm. It's a 5-mana, 3/2 blue for a legendary creature, Elemental Giant. It's a 4/5 with flash and flying. Spells you cast with converted mana cost 5 or greater cost 1 less to cast and can't be countered. So, I don't know about standard, but
I want to go ahead and say a prayer for those in historic, because this card is going to slot right into Simic Nexus, and their Nexuses are going to cost 6 and be uncounterable, so good luck. I hope they ban Nexus of Fate, because this card's going to make it really good.
No, no, they don't ban stuff in Historic.
Oh, yeah, they're going to suspend Nexus of Fate. But this card is just going to be a powerhouse in that deck, because it is Flash, and it's a 4-5 beater, but it also just makes your more expensive cards just uncounterable and cheaper. So this is also kind of this might actually see play in a control style deck in Standard as well.
Yeah.
It's a nice finisher, and like, let's say you're running some of the 5-mana board wipes. It's going to make them cost 4, and then they can't be countered. So some of your bigger payoff cards are going to be foolproof against, you know, like if there's like a Simic Flash deck running around, or a Simic or an Is It Flash that are just running around with counters. This card's going to be a nice little whammo to them. But yeah, I think I like this card a lot. I think it'll be fun. But yeah. Say a little prayer for those in Historic, because Nexus of Fate is going to be broken by this card. It's already broken, but this card's going to help it like propel even farther into just being incredibly annoying. This also makes Teferi cost 1 less, I believe. I think it's just spells. Yep. So Teferi Hero of Dominaria, 4-mana uncounterable.
Yeah.
Seems good. Moving on. Terranika, a Crowan veteran. She's 3-mana for a legendary creature. It's 1/2 white. Legendary creature, human soldier. 3/3 with vigilance. Whenever she attacks, untap another target creature you control. Until end of turn, that creature has base power and toughness 4/4 and gains indestructible. This is obviously a nod to Gideon, because if you look in the back of her art, you actually see Gideon's Rest in Peace statue that's on Theros. So she basically takes another one of your creatures and turns them into a Gideon, a 4/4 indestructible. And yeah, if there's some kind of like mono white weenies deck, this card's going to see play in that, just for the fact that, like, even if she dies in combat, you're still up a 4/4 indestructible that for that turn.
Yeah.
And she has vigilance, so you just keep attacking in. Attack block, attack block.
Turn them sideways, yep. Unless they have vigilance.
Going to be a good card. Definitely will see play in some kind of mono-white deck.
Yeah. All right, next we've got Eidolon of Obstruction. 2-mana, 1/1 for an enchantment creature, Spirit. It's a 2/1 with first strike. Loyalty abilities of planeswalkers your opponent control cost 1 generic mana more to activate. Ha! You have to pay something.
Yeah, no more. Activate your planeswalker. No more dropping Teferi on turn 3, and then Teferi immediately bouncing your thing. They got to pay 1 mana for that.
Ha! Get wrecked.
Yeah, this card is really nice. It just really just shuts down walkers being able to come out and immediately do something. So if this is in, like, I think this could be in a nice little mono white weenie deck. It's a 2/1 with first strike.
Yeah.
So you play this, and then they play Teferi. Teferi can't do anything, and then you're playing Terranika on turn 3, and then you're attacking Teferi. Teferi's down to 2. Teferi can't bounce your stuff anymore. they still have to pay mana to activate his plus one, so it's still going to be taxing them. And then you swing in, you know, with seven on the next turn. That, like, I think this will fit really nicely into some kind of, like, mono-white weenie deck. Especially if, like, a lot of planeswalkers are still, you know, wreaking havoc. Like, Teferi and Vraska and Nissa. This will stop Nissa from even using her ability if she comes out on turn five. Or sooner if they gain five mana.
Yeah.
Then Nissa won't be able to make a blocker. So I think this is a really good card.
Yep. Seems good.
Next up, we got a really long... Jeez. This card's really long. This is Thassa's Oracle for 2 blue. She's a Merfolk Wizard creature. When Thassa's Oracle enters the battlefield, look at the top X cards of your library where X is your devotion to blue. Put up to one of them on top of your library and the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. If X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game. And it's a 1/3. So this card, interesting. I don't really know how to put it. This could see, like, if there's like a mono blue mill deck, maybe this is like a win condition. To a degree, maybe. Like, I mean, it's a mono blue self mill deck.
I mean, they've got to have some sort of mill card in like every deck, just so the people that want to play mill can be like, oh, hey, let's try it.
I will say that this card is absolutely bonkers in Commander, because you have, if you play Hermit Druid and don't run any basic lands, Hermit Druid just makes your deck disappear, and then you play this, and then it just makes you win instantly. It doesn't even have to rely on your next turn, like Lab Maniac. Lab Maniac requires you to draw a card. So this just enters in. It already has 2 blue devotion, so it already looks at the top 2 cards, and that'd be greater than or equal to the amount of cards in your deck, so you just win. So
yeah.
There are some pretty older... There's some older cards in Commander that really combo really well with this card, so it'll shine there. It's not going to... I don't think it's going to shine anywhere else, unless there's some kind of just, like, jank mill deck, self-mill deck. Who knows?
There will always be jank.
Somewhere.
Next, we've got Enigmatic Incarnation, which is a 4 mana, 2, a green, and a blue. For an enchantment, at the beginning of your end step, you may sacrifice another enchantment. If you do, search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to 1 plus the sacrificed enchantment's converted mana cost. Put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So it's a birthing pod kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a birthing pod that activates every turn, but you may do it, and it's for enchantments. So if you're playing a very enchantment-heavy deck, you can turn your enchantment creatures or just your enchantments into creatures of higher mana cost. This card definitely opens up a lot of creativity. So I don't know where this will see play, but I think there's something for it in Standard, something for it maybe even in Pioneer, probably a little more jank in Pioneer.
Give me that Brawl, boy.
And something in Brawl. I think this is historic. I think this has a place in a lot of different formats. I don't know how good it's going to be in Standard. It definitely is interesting. We'll have to just look into and see what combos really well with this. So I don't know. Maybe some kind of Sultai deck running some of those Sultai colored enchantments, and then maybe dropping a Pelucranos down from your library, something like that, might be pretty good. That or any of the Cavaliers from your library, pretty good.
Cavaliers.
Fun card. Moving on. Nightmare Shepherd. 4 mana, 2 black for an enchantment creature demon, flying. Whenever another Dawn token creature you control dies, you may exile it. If you do, create a token that's a copy of that creature, except it's a 1/1. It's a nightmare in addition to its other types. That's
Seems
a lot of text.
Seems good.
But this could, if you're playing like a sacrifice deck where you don't really care about your graveyard necessarily, this card can kind of repurpose some enter the battlefield effects. So it could be good there. It's also just a 4/4 for 4 that has flying, which is also just really good stats in general. So it's a beater. I think this card will probably slide its way into some kind of... This card slides its way really well into like a mono black devotion deck in Standard. The fact that it has 2 black pips and it comes on turn 4, right into, you know, Gary on turn 5. I think this will probably slot its way into a deck like that. Maybe a sacrifice shenanigans deck. I don't know how much room they have in those decks for extra cards, but this will probably see play. It's just a good value card. I mean, if you play this on turn 4 and then they play turn 5, they make Gary, and then you have Ayara on your field, and then you sack Gary, and then you make a token of Gary, and Gary comes back down again and then drains your opponent again, that'd be really good. So I think this card's definitely a mainstay in some kind of mono-black devotion deck, for sure.
I am curious, and I'm assuming the copy that of the creature, is it going to be... Will the copy have the same CMC, just it's a 1/1.
Yeah.
Yep. Lit.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
All right. Next, we'll move on to our fourth intervention. Thassa's intervention, which is an X blue blue instant. Choose one. Look at the top X cards of your library. Put up to two of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Or counter target spell unless its controller pays twice X. It's a Chase is over there just, oh man.
I got a lot to say about this card.
It's a good card. It's versatile.
Number one, it's versatile. So it's got two modes. It's what control wants. It's instant speed. It either can get you card advantage or it can counter something. So that's obviously what control wants. Kind of the problem I see with this though is the less mana you have, this card's not very good. So 3 mana, this card is a 3 mana quench or a 3 mana draw a card. Not very good. Once you get to 4 mana, it's basically just a 4 mana draw 2 cards, which we already have an effect like that. Or, you know, better than a quench. It's kind of at that point kind of a hard counter for 4 mana. Once you get up to like 5-6 mana, that's when this card really starts to shine. So this card isn't like a syncopate effect where you can play this, hold this up really early game. This card is not very good early game. This card definitely benefits from the long game. So I think it's good. I don't think it's like a 4 of in a control deck. I think it's more of like maybe a 1 or a 2 of. Maybe it kind of fills the role of like a Dig Through Time-esque card that's also a counter spell. So the fact that it is versatile will definitely let it see play, but I don't think it's as good as people are thinking it is. I wish it had more of an effect with earlier with a lower mana cost, but it doesn't. But yeah, that's my 2 cents.
So your 2 cents is you want the control card to be a better control card.
I'm just yes, but
I'm just poking fun at you.
I think it's a good card, but I think it definitely is better the more mana you put into it for sure. So like an X spell.
Huh. Crazy how that works. You pay more mana for a card and it's better.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on. Shadow Spear. This is a legendary artifact equipment for 1 mana. Equipped creature gets +1/+1, has trample and lifelink, has an activated ability of 1 mana, permanents your opponent control, lose hexproof and indestructible until the end of turn, and it has an equip cost of 2. So this comes down turn 1, can activate its ability for 1 mana, can equip it to your creature for 2 mana, and it gives it trample, lifelink, and +1/+1. This is probably one of the strongest equipments we have seen in a long time. Definitely is a good answer to the gods.
You know what else is a good answer to? Lotus Fields.
Yeah. I guess in a way, that, I mean, we already...
In case you can't tell, I've played a lot of Lotus Fields in Pioneer recently.
So in Pioneer, though, you already have a few effects like that, so... I don't know. Maybe this could, like... In general, it's just an aggressive card, so maybe like an aggressive deck... and then allowing you to just kind of to handle some hexproof and indestructible threats is really nice. This card will probably see play in some form or another in some kind of aggressive deck as just, you know, a nice little counter to maybe some of the things that aggressive decks can't handle, like the gods and hexproof creatures. Get a little bit of lifelink from it, and you have trample. So just all together, I think it's just a really strong equipment.
Yep. Next, we'll move on to Bronzehide Lion, which is 2 mana. A green and a white for a creature cat that's a 3/3. And it has an ability that costs a green and a white, and it gains indestructible until end of turn. And then whenever it dies, return it to the battlefield. It's an aura enchantment with enchant creature you control and has the same text, pay a green and a white. Enchanted creature gains indestructible until end of turn, and it loses all other abilities. So, very interesting.
It is super interesting. It's a
2 mana 3/3, first of all, is pretty dope.
It's pretty dope, but we've seen them before, and they were only somewhat playable.
That's true.
But still, no, yeah, 2 mana 3/3 is nothing to scoff at. It's 2 mana 3/3 that on turn 3, you can make it indestructible, which is pretty nice. Yeah. And then if it dies, if you have another creature, it just becomes an aura enchantment that's not a creature anymore. And just attaches to a creature and gives it the same ability that this card had.
Yeah.
So it's like you're wearing the lion's hide.
Yeah.
And giving you indestructible. I think that's a really cool card. I think this card could maybe fit somewhere also into a green-white enchantments deck.
I thought you were going to say a blue-black control deck.
Yep, blue-black control deck. Just slide it in there. They'll never know.
They won't be prepared for it.
They won't be prepared.
Probably because you'll never play it.
Yeah, exactly. But I really like this card. I don't know where it's going to fit in, but I think it's good. Definitely good.
Yeah. If only the kitty cats could come back from, like, Omnicat cats.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you get to play with that in Pioneer.
It's true.
You get to play with cat decks.
It's true.
Don't know. I don't think they're going to be very good still, but no. Hey.
All right. Moving on.
Next, we've got Dream Trawler. This is my this is a control card thing. So this is 6 mana, 2 colorless, 2 white, 2 blue for a creature Sphinx, flying lifelink, 3/5. Whenever you draw a card, Dream Trawler gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Whenever Dream Trawler attacks, draw a card, and then it has a third ability: discard a card. Dream Trawler gains hexproof until end of turn. Tap it. This card is just. It's a control finisher. That's what it is. This card was designed to be a control finisher. It has a way to draw cards. It has a way to gain new life. It has a way to finish the game. And it has a way to protect itself. Altogether, it's a control finisher, and I'm leaving it at that.
Yep.
It's expensive. It's 6 mana, but that's how much control finishers are. And yep. I think it's going to be a pretty good control finisher for the most part. I mean,
it's a pretty good.
Yeah, well, you can give it hexproof, so that's always good.
Yep.
As long as they don't have a Shadow Spear, you'll be fine.
Moving on. Elspeth Conquers Death. This is a 5 mana, 3 and 2 white for an enchantment saga with 3 chapters. The first chapter, exile target permanent and opponent controls with converted mana cost 3 or greater. Second, non-creature spells your opponents cast cost 2 more to cast until your next turn. And then the third and final chapter, return target creature or planeswalker card from your graveyard to the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter or loyalty counter on it.
See, now I just want to resident a creature and put a loyalty counter on it.
Yeah.
Since it gives you the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, do it. Do it.
I look at this card and I think of Eldest Reborn, which was also 5 mana. This is just the white version, so it kills something, makes it to where your opponent can't really interact with you until your next turn, and then just brings you something back and makes it a little bigger or puts a little bit more loyalty on it. So I like this card a lot.
This one is specifically from your graveyard, though.
True. So it's not as bonkers, but I still think it's a good card.
Yeah.
I don't know where it would slot in. Maybe if there's some kind of like mid-range deck that has white in it, this card will probably be like, maybe slide in. I don't know. It depends what's really running around. If there's a lot of big monsters decks, this is a pretty solid choice.
Yeah.
Potentially, like just coming in, killing something, next turn maybe stopping some of their removal effects, and then the following turn get something back from your side. So I think it has the potential, at least in standard, for sure. I don't even think it's that good. I don't think it's that good and limited. It's probably not that good and limited.
I mean, it gets rid of
rid of something, but the second effect is not going to be very...
second effect's not great.
And the third effect is going to be just okay. You're not going to have anything bonkers in your yard, most likely. So, yeah. Moving on. Protean Thaumaturge. That's a mouthful. It's 2 mana for a 1 and a blue for a creature human wizard 1/1. Has constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, you may have this card become a copy of another target creature, except it has this ability. So it's basically, a clone type effect that triggers whenever enchantments enter, and then you can have it become the copy of another creature with that same ability, so it can keep changing.
Yeah.
I don't think this card's very good, but it's interesting.
Yep. All right. Second to last rare.
We're in the home stretch.
Shatter the Sky. 4 mana, 2 and 2 white. For a sorcery, each player who controls a creature with power 4 or greater draws a card. Then destroy all creatures. So, it's a Wrath of God with possibly you and your opponent draws a card.
Are you telling me that's a 4 mana board wipe in standard?
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, I don't care. I'm playing it anyways. I don't care what it does. It destroys creatures for 4 mana.
Yeah. I mean,
if there's an aggro deck,
it's not Wrath of God.
If there's an aggro deck,
it's very close, though.
Yes. If there's an aggro deck, it's not very likely that they'll have a 4-power creature and one by turn 4. I also want to note that some people have said, like, maybe this could be in, like, some kind of, like, green-white mid-range deck, and they, like, play, like, Gideon Blackblade, which is a 4-4 indestructible creature on your turn, and so you just wipe the board, draw a card off Gideon, and then you still attack them, because Gideon's still alive. So that's an interesting little combo.
True.
But yeah, I'm going to slot this deck. If there's a blue-white control deck, this card is going in that deck. Just because I don't care if you draw a card. Like, at most, maybe you'll draw one card from this. And at least you're not drawing anything, and I'm wiping your board. So I love this card. I'm happy with this card. 100%. I don't even care about the draw effect. I think it's just a good card.
Yeah.
For sure. And then the final card that we've seen so far, I don't know if there's any more rares left in general to be revealed. We are, like I said, this isn't the last day of reveals. We still got tomorrow. But Heliod's Intervention. So this is finishing up the intervention cycle. This is X and 2 white for an instant. Choose one, destroy X target artifacts and or enchantments, and then or target player gains twice X life. I don't really know what I expected out of a white intervention. I totally knew that we all knew the second effect would be some kind of life gain. But the first one's kind of cool. Unless there's like a really rampant enchantment deck running around, this is not going to see play in standard. Just because the second ability of gaining life just isn't good. We've seen effects like this in the past that just really aren't good. Probably see play in some kind of casual formats. I don't think it's going to see play in any other format, though.
Nope.
Definitely not. But
I agree.
That rounds us up. Whew, we had a lot of cards to cover today. Way more cards than our first episode of this. But that is what we think is it. Next week, we'll clean up any more.
One more card you wanted to talk about.
There is another. There's one more card. There's
Here, I'll read it for you.
I'll let you do it.
Mystic Repeal. It costs one green for an instant. Put target enchantment on the bottom of its owner's library. Chase hates this card.
I didn't even want to talk about this card. This card just This card grinds my gears. You know why? You know why this card grinds my gears? It's one mana enchantment removal in green at instant speed. You know what other card? What other color does that? White. Make it two mana. Just give us like we already have like we just got Return to Nature. Give us Return to Nature. That's fine. Don't give me a one mana. Put an enchantment on the bottom of my library. That is better than shuffling it into your library. So in Last Theros, we saw a 2-mana instant that shuffled an artifact or enchantment into your library, into its owner's library, which that's fine. It shuffles. So I have a higher likelihood of drawing that back. With this card, it goes to the bottom of your library. If you're not running the one of, what, two land-fetching cards or library-shuffling cards in standard, then you're just, that card's dead. It's literally dead. One mana, it's dead. One mana, okay. Let me just play my Clothis, or let me play my Heliod, or let me play my Thassa, and okay, pass. Opponent on your instep. One mana. I have one green up. It's not Veil of Summer, and I'm gonna take your god and put it on the bottom of your library. I hate this card. I hate this card so much.
The soapbox brought to you by Wizards of the Coast. And their love for green stuff that pisses Chase off.
I really don't like that card. Anyways, when you said we had one more card, I thought you meant we missed the Labyrinth. We missed the land. So I thought you meant that card.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Labyrinth of Skophos. It's a land. Taps for one colorless, or you can pay 4 and tap it to remove target attacking or blocking creature from combat. So it's kind of like if you're familiar with the card Maze of Ith, which is a really old card, which removes attacking or blocking creatures from combat for a cheaper cost. It's kind of like that. This is 5 mana. Maybe it'll slide its way into a control deck as like a one of, as just like an additional way to stop aggressive threats if they're like
running. I don't even think it would be aggressive threats. It would be like just
threats in general.
Another control deck, and then you're like, okay, your one control thing can't hit me.
Yeah.
Huh.
Something like that. Yeah. That's it. We've hit it. That's every card. There are some other cards, but we're not going to talk about them today because we'll talk about them next week. So, okay, David, we've seen almost all the cards from this set. I want to know, what is your favorite card from this set?
I think my favorite card is going to come down to Erebos' intervention.
Oh. And why do you think that card's your favorite card?
It's an instant. It's a removal spell, so it's good.
It's your favorite color too. It's black. Your favorite color.
Well, I was more so thinking because it messes with the Madrotha graveyard decks. I'm not even thinking standard-wise here.
Oh. It's out here to get me. Good thing I got other decks.
Yep. Just slotting that into all my commander decks. And by all of them, I mean the one that actually has black in it.
Yeah, I was about to say, all your other commander decks don't have black in it, so.
Yeah. See, Chase thinks my favorite color is black. But at the end of the day, guess what color is in all of my commander decks?
White. Okay, well, interesting. I see we're going for a little more aggressive approach towards picking your favorite card. So I'm going to be nice. And my favorite card, contrary to my whole spasm from earlier over green, I like this card a lot. And it's the Tessin Champion. It's the 3-mana, 2 and a green for a human warrior creature with constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it and draw a card for 1/3. Just a solid card.
You know what? After saying that, you've totally changed my mind.
It's not bonkers, but it's just a solid card, and it's just I'm gonna get this card. This card is gonna be so good. I'm just gonna build around this card and make a really nice, you know, green white enchantments deck.
Like I said, you totally just changed my mind.
If your next card is Heliod's Intervention, I'm gonna leave the room.
No.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna say Dryad of Elysium Grove. Jeez.
I thought you were just going to counter me again. I don't
know. No!
So I heard you want to play all these enchantments. Let me play this card that destroys all the enchantments. No. You're being for real?
Yeah.
All right.
Real talk. But yeah, there's a lot of fun cards in here. Scrolling through, it's not like, hey, all these cards are broken.
Some of them are. But some of them are really good.
Yeah.
Way better than others.
Hmm.
But I agree with you. I think Dryad of Elysian Grove was my second pick. I really like that card too.
We're turning into commander players, Chase. What's wrong with this?
We're just picking good commander cards. It's not my fault. Standard sucks right now. I want this set to come out already so I can stop playing Throne of Eldraine Standard on Arena. I do not care for it.
Just play Best of One. It's kind of not the same thing.
Kind of.
It's totally the same thing. Totally. It's still bad.
100% same thing. All right, David.
I'm surprised your favorite card's not Dalakos. Wait, is it Dalakos? Is that what you said? No, it's definitely not what you said because it's green. The Merfolk Artificer. Tap, add 2 colorless, spin this mana, unlimited cast artifacts.
That's spells. My favorite commander card. So, like, if I was going to... This is the card I'd build a commander of from this set.
Okay.
All right, David. You got anything else to say? Good. Okay. See you guys.